KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
What, you're in a play? I thought you said you were in show business. This week on The Business, the weird relationship between Hollywood and LA's legit stage. Plus, even though they're not actors, directors can get typecast too. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Go nowhere, it's The Business from KCRW. With the economy hanging more limp than Hugh Hefner before Cialis, festivities in Hollywood are being suspended left and right. William Morris and the United Talent Agency have both canceled their usually lavish holiday fests, as have Disney and Viacom. Indeed, you can hardly blame Viacom's owner, Sumner Redstone. He may have to sell the theater chain owned by his National Amusements holding company just to keep control of CBS and Viacom, as the New York Times reported last week. But one man remains undaunted in the face of such financial facts: Vanity Fair publisher Graydon Carter. Last week, Mr. Carter announced that the Vanity Fair Oscar Party, which was suspended this year because of the writer's strike, would return to its celeb-fueled splendor next year. Although he did acknowledge that, quote, given the current economy and our dedication to the green movement, we will be recycling many of the elements of years past, end quote. In other words, they'll be serving those goat cheese crostinis that were discovered to have fallen behind Brett Ratner's sofa during the after party for Rush Hour 2. It's not just the economy putting the pinch on all the partying. The Screen Actors Guild, still struggling to gain leverage against the producers, is threatening to blow up award season again. And here, we should take a moment to celebrate the wonderfully ironic, unintended consequences of SAG's aggressive posturing. As Variety reported last week, SAG's quote-unquote strike saber-rattling is sending the TV studios running into the arms of its rival union, AFTRA, at least for the next TV pilot season. With the prospect of SAG going on strike by mid-January, more broadcast network pilots will actually be produced under AFTRA contracts than under SAG's. In other words, regardless of whether or not SAG goes on strike next year, it's already lost more than it could hope to gain. Elsewhere, an important milestone occurred last week in the music biz. Atlantic Records, a unit of Warner Music, announced that more than half of its music sales in the U.S. are now from digital products, like downloads on iTunes and ringtones for cell phones. That's a first for a label. But while Warner beat fourth quarter expectations with digital revenue up 28%, the Wall Street Journal notes that Warner's digital business is growing more slowly than the previous quarter, and the one before that, too. And it's a safe bet digital song sales will only get worse in the next quarter. Because, thanks to iTunes, digital sales these days march in lockstep with the sales of Apple's hardware. And things aren't looking good for the iPod. Last week, Piper Jaffray analysts projected that iPod sales will drop by double digits in 2009, plunging 12%. With 170 million iPods out there already and no new models coming out anytime soon, and, oh yes, the economy, things are just going to get worse. Brother, can you spare an iTunes card? And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later in the show, getting pigeonholed is bad enough when you're a pigeon, but it's even worse when you're a director. But next, making the stage legit in a TV and film town. If I say live theater, you probably think Broadway. But L.A. is a theater town. Maybe 1,000 stage productions went up here last year, and while many of those were of the, come on gang, let's put on a show variety, the city and its surrounding areas are home to a large and growing number of world-class theater venues, and some of the smartest and most cutting-edge theater in the world. But L.A. is the show business center of the world, and that's, ironically, the very reason it's not known for its theater, which, last we checked, is part of show business. Theater is often seen here by the business as something you do while you're waiting for that TV pilot or that feature callback. People who say they're dedicated to the stage are often viewed as simply stuck in the minor leagues. It's hard to understand the attitude of the business as a whole towards the stage. It would seem the perfect place to scout new talent, an inexpensive way to workshop new material, and to find ideas for movies and TV shows. And it is all of those things. sometimes. We have the two perfect people to talk about why there isn't a more vibrant relationship between the LA stage and the screen. Rita Wilson has been acting since she was 14. As a producer, she helped transform My Big Fat Greek Wedding and Mamma Mia from stage shows into wildly successful movies. Robert Rosen is the dean of the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television. Note, all three. Rita's also on the board of the school, and this Tuesday she and her husband, Tom Hanks, will host a fundraiser called With a Little Help from Our Friends. That will include a performance of You Can't Take It With You, directed by Nora Ephron, and featuring Rita, Tom, and truly an all-star cast. Our producer Matt Holzman spoke with Bob Rosen and Rita Wilson last week.
Rita Wilson, Bob Rosen, welcome to the business.
Thank you. It's
happy to be here.
What is the relationship, do you think, here in L.A., this strange relationship between the stage and the screen?
There's no question that one of the issues we confront at UCLA is having a theater department along with film and television in a movie town.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what do you do? The one you cover, you can cover it up and say, no, theater is totally different from film and television. It has its own integrity, its own dimension, and keep it totally separate. The other is to flaunt it and to say, we're a theater department in a movie town. and we try to incorporate that into our curriculum and how we teach. And the notion that you can train an actor to be on a stage playing to that spectator in the furthest balcony up there, and at the same time know how to restrain themselves in front for that close-up with a camera in front of them. And the notion of having that flexibility, I think, is one of the things we can do here. And it's one of the reasons people come to Los Angeles, come to UCLA.
Well, now you're talking about craft, and that's obviously a big part of this picture. But Rita, if you're a person who lives in this town, and even if you are you come from New York, and you are a theater actor, and you say, the theater is where I can really practice my craft, but then, you drive home from the theater every night wiping off your makeup in your, Nissan B210, and your friends are in their, Mercedes, at some point that it's got to wear on you. Just, is that perhaps one of the major differences between New York and Los Angeles, is that you're surrounded by kind of the lucre of Hollywood here so much that it remains hard to stay true to what is some would see as a more pure craft?
No, because people who do theater and love doing theater feel that they are actors first and foremost, and the accoutrements of success don't really play that big of a part. I always ask people who are up and coming, do you want to be an actor or do you want to be famous? Because that's two different things. And if you want to be an actor, then you have to train and you have to perhaps ask yourself if you can do this for, would you be happy just making a decent living as opposed to making, the kind of money that certain people do. And you have to ask yourself that, because if you love what you're doing, then you're going to do it and you can't help it. If somebody said to you, you can't do it, you'd cry. You'd go crazy. You wouldn't be able to, live your life. So,
But isn't that a major difference between New York and L.A., that in New York, it really is possible to make a living as a stage actor, and in L.A., it's much more difficult?
Probably true, but, there's just a lot. L.A. has a lot of theaters. There are a lot of small theaters. I go to a lot of whatever you would call the 99C, Equity Wave or 99C theaters, and I see productions because, there's still really talented people doing shows out there. Of course, in New York, you have Broadway, off-Broadway, and it gets a lot more attention. My fantasy is that all those empty buildings in Westwood would get converted to theaters, and Westwood would become the theater district for the city of Los Angeles. I mean, you'd still have all the other places, but it would be one centrally located place that people could go and see theater.
It's a genius idea.
Also, on the relationship of the theater and film in terms of employment, one of the things, a lot of my friends, a lot of the actors I know are in those equity waiver houses. They love doing it. They enjoy doing it. One, they grow and mm-hmm. become better. And the other is, that's also a showcase for working in film and television.
Sure.
And that so many of those theaters are functioning, you get so many opportunities to be on stage in Los Angeles, means that you have a greater opportunity if you want to work across media of being found and having your talent appreciated.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point because I think that, and I'm painting a very broad brush here, but the people that you're trying to reach, agents, casting directors, maybe directors, a lot of them who don't come from a theater background are, well, let's put it this way. In the same way that an average person can't read a script and see a movie out of it, I think a lot of people can't see live theater and see a stage, a screen actor, obviously because they look very different. They're lit really well on the screen and they're edited really well and they're not right there and, you know, all those things. So is it always a good thing to have, you know, one of these Philistine, or maybe my presumption is really a bad one?
I would beg to differ with you on that because I think that talent is talent, and when you're looking for something specific in terms of a character that you're trying to cast, you're going for whatever that talent is.
Bob?
Yeah, and the other thing is, look, if I were an actor, I'd much prefer to be seen playing a role in a significant play than in an audition, you know, with, you know, 50 other people waiting and the mechanics of that going on. I'd much rather have that compelling relationship that comes from a full engagement in a role with people in an audience in order for people to gauge who I am and what I can do. So the problem is to get the agents to come.
Right. Bob, are there students there at the school who say they strictly want to be in the theater? And for all of the students there as part of the curriculum, is the business taught as part of what you teach your kids?
There are people here who want specifically to be in the theater.
God bless them.
They want to be in theater in Los Angeles. They want to be in theater in New York. And one of the things that in one of the classes we have, you have an assignment. And the assignment is you have to, before the end of the quarter, find work somewhere and have a practical experience. And then there's discussion about how that business works and how you go about doing it and how you prepare for making that transition from the educational world to the professional world.
More real-world training than a doctor gets, usually.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the strange relationship between Hollywood and L.A.'s legit stage. Rita Wilson has been acting since she was 14. As a producer, she helped turn My Big Fat Greek Wedding and Mamma Mia from stage plays into wildly successful movies. Robert Rosen is the dean of the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television. Matt Holzman spoke with Bob Rosen and Rita Wilson last week.
Rita, you saw Greek Wedding on the stage,
yeah.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and that made it to the screen, and it did okay. So what is it that you're doing right that could be emulated, and what are the pitfalls of helping make that transition?
I just see it, like, in my head. This could be great. This could be so much fun. It's a visceral thing, but it's also a very practical thing. Does this thing make me laugh? Does it touch me? Does it move me in any sort of way? And that goes for actors. It goes for material. It goes for, you know, direction. It could be anything. And,
yeah.
You know, I see lots of great small productions of things that I don't believe can be made into movies or, you know, TV series or anything like that.
Well, what about Greek Wedding said to you, this would make a great movie and people will go and see this?
I felt that it was a universal experience.
People could relate.
Yeah, but I also liked it because I thought it appealed to men and women and it appealed to different generations, which I really like when I'm looking for material.
All right, so it seems pretty straightforward. So why aren't more people doing that?
I don't know. Don't tell them to do it. Then it leaves less for me.
No, but I think one
because I love it. Because some people don't love it. You either love it or you don't love it. If you don't love going to small, dinky 99-seat theaters and making an evening out of it, then don't do it.
Yeah.
Then go see something else. You know, some people love foreign films. Some people love, you know, small theater. I don't know.
I think there's also a question of habit and tradition. The notion that you're going to go, that your point of departure for evaluating a project is going to be reading the script is really deeply embedded. You know, there's patterns that have been developed over a very long time.
And you can read a script sitting around your pool at home as opposed to, right?
Yeah, and on the TV front, that process of going to pilot, which is insane. It is a crazy, insane process. is valorized. And, you know, it's just, that seems to be the way that successful TV shows are found. So in both television and film, there are long-established patterns that could be broken. I mean, one of the great things about a live theater performance in terms of evaluating a work is you have an audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can see if there's a relationship between what's going on the stage and the people. You can hear the laughs.
Well, let's talk about that, because both Fox TV and Comedy Central have established some kind of regular stage presence to kind of develop material in front of live groups. But there just isn't that much of that done. And quite frankly, not a lot has come out of that. There hasn't been a lot of real, you know, ripe fruit that's come from that. I wonder why that would be.
It could be that if their idea is just, you know, trying to generate material, well, you can come up with a million ideas, but if there isn't a visionary behind it to sort of drive it, then you just have a lot of ideas.
I think an awful lot of comics have moved from live performance, from showcases of one kind or another, onto television. I think there is a history there of movement. I think the idea of the television networks of developing programs or series, I believe, again, is there's a disinclination to do it because of established patterns, most of them dealing with the way that projects are developed and brought to pilot stage. I think that's changing in part right now. I think there's a certain questioning of the economics of that whole crazy system of starting with huge number of projects, taking them through various expensive stages till, you know, you ultimately do a pilot and then maybe it gets adopted and maybe it lasts two or three beyond two or three shows. I think there's a real questioning of that now in the television industry, and I think you will find a greater inclination to look elsewhere. But it hasn't happened yet because that hasn't been the history.
Well, and because producers don't want to lose their deals. And there's a lot of people who get paid very well along that process who may or may not ever have anything produced.
Exactly.
So,
that's,
I mean, right. You know, in England, they use both radio and the stage as workshops for a lot of their very successful TV shows. And
that's right.
There really is no reason that we couldn't do that here. We just don't.
There isn't the culture for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in England, remember that theater is the mothership. You know, the theater. You know, England is the land of Shakespeare. The way in which theater is valorized as a central and pivotal aspect of culture doesn't work here. Isn't the same.
Well, the question of why Americans are cretins is out of the scope of this conversation, unfortunately. But we've talked about a lot of interesting things, and thank you so much for taking the time to do it. Robert Rosen is the dean of the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television. Rita Wilson has worked on the stage and screen since the age of 14 as a producer. She helped turn My Big Fat Greek Wedding and Mamma Mia from stage plays into wildly successful movies. She's also on the board of the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television. And this Tuesday, she and her husband, Tom Hanks, will be hosting a fundraiser for them called With a Little Help from Our Friends that will include a performance of You Can't Take It With You, directed by Nora Ephron and featuring Rita and Tom. And
we have a great cast.
Yeah, well, tell me.
Okay. We have Tom Hanks, Annette Bening, James Cromwell, John Hamm, Martin Short, Dave Annabelle, Alicia Silverstone, Kevin Chamberlain, Ian Gomez, Holland Taylor, Caroline Aaron.
And more to come.
And more to come. I think there's three more to come.
Right.
Well, that is very exciting. We'll have a link to that information on our site at kcrw.com/thebusiness. That, again, is Tuesday the 2nd at UCLA. Robert Rosen, Rita Wilson, thank you so much for joining us on The Business.
No great problem. Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, getting pigeonholed is bad enough when you're a pigeon, but it's even worse when you're a director. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. The term typecasting is most aptly applied to actors, but in Hollywood it can apply to almost any craft or trade. If you're a special effects guy and you've done a lot of sci-fi stuff, you can bet those are the calls you're going to get. And that's probably fine. But if you're a director, being typecast can be deadly to a long career. And being seen only as a horror director can be the most deadly of all. So a group of young directors known primarily for horror jumped at the chance to get out of the horror box by way of the Xbox. You see, Microsoft wants to make their game console, the Xbox 360, more than just a game console. Kind of an entertainment Swiss Army knife. And to do that, you need more than games. Microsoft's first stab at that is the new series called Horror Meets Comedy, featuring funny shorts by the aforementioned directors. We've got two of them here today. Amongst other credits, James Gunn wrote Dawn of the Dead and directed Slither, and Lucky McKee was the director of horror flicks May and the Woods. James Gunn, Lucky McKee, welcome to the business.
Thanks, Claude.
Thanks.
So what was your reaction when they approached you about doing this? James, do you want to go first?
I strangely had just been in a conversation the day before with Rob Zombie and then the night before with James Wan. And I was working on some comedy projects, and Rob Zombie said to me, you know, I'd really love to do something in comedy. And then James Wan, who directed the original Saw movie, said, God, I'd really like to do a romantic comedy someday.
Now, that's right. We should point out for listeners that Rob Zombie, of course, directed the horror movie House of a Thousand Corpses, and more recently, Halloween, H2O, and Devil's Rejects. And, of course, James Wan is the first director of the Saw, the groundbreaking sort of horror movies.
But here were two really powerful, you know, directors that have a, you know, very famous and have a lot of attention put on them, and yet they didn't get the opportunity to do all the kind of content that they wanted to do. So when Xbox approached me, sitting in the room, I'm like, hey, what about if we did a series of short films where horror directors directed comedy shorts? And Xbox they immediately in the room were like, yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I mean, then we just started going.
What did you hope it would do for your career? Lucky, were you thinking like this will really have them thinking of me in a different way?
Yeah, and I thought maybe, you know, when people saw me doing a straight comedy that they would go back and look at some of the other things I'd made and see some of those elements that were already there. You know, it was just when you put a horror label on thing, it kind of lumps it into one category in a lot of people's brains.
That's interesting because most people think of doing these sorts of things with an eye towards future projects, and it sounds like what you were more interested in was making people maybe revisit some of the things you'd done and reconsider it in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I consider the Masters of Horror episode I did, Sick Girl, I consider that a comedy just as much as a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Things get put into the ghetto of horror films, and then that's all they're considered. And I think it's true of everybody who works in the horror field. You know, there's a lot of great performances out there of people who are in horror movies, and they're really turning terrific performances, but because it's in a horror film, people don't really see the skill that it takes. I think that you're constantly ghettoized by whatever you've done. One of the first movies I ever wrote was a movie called The Specials, and it was like a movie about these superheroes on their day off, a very, very low budget film. But it got the script got a lot of attention in Hollywood. But then after that, all I got offered were these superhero projects, just one after the other, after the other, after the other. People just really stereotype you and put you into a box, and that's all you are. And it can be very hard to break out of that.
Lucky, I mean, same thing for you. I mean, do you ever feel like
you'd like to go up for something?
Give me an example.
I made May, and it was the first thing that I got out there that got any kind of notice, Sundance and everything, and, you know, we came back to Hollywood and started interviewing for jobs, and everything that I was going in for, you know, and May is a very, very character-based story. It's, you know, it owes more to movies like Taxi Driver or Repulsion than it does to just typical horror films. And everything I was getting put up for were just remakes of Japanese horror movies.
So, Lucky, I mean, do you hope that you can now get, you know, an Adam Sandler comedy, that you can work in genres that you probably would not have been thought of for?
I would absolutely love that. Horror is a great place to start as a filmmaker. You know, I mean, look at Sam Raimi going from making Evil Dead on Super 8, you know, all the way to shooting Spider-Man, you know, all these years later. I mean, you can transform over the course of your career, but as a filmmaker, you have to prove to people that you can, you know, that you can flex your muscles in those different arenas.
What about you, James? You going to make Evan Almighty 6?
No, I mean, frankly, I'm so excited about doing this stuff in new media that that's all I want to do right now. So I'm spending 100% of my time creating content for gaming platforms, for the internet and for mobile phones. And it feels like being Milton Berle on TV in 1949. It's, we're creating what this format is, and that's endlessly exciting to me.
So one last question that I'd like to jump back into Hollywood for a second here with both of you. Is there anything about the particular skills of a horror director that shapes how you direct a comedy? James?
Absolutely. I think that there is a very, very close connection between horror and comedy. I mean,
both horror and comedy are gag-based.
Mm-hmm.
They're both gag-based. They both exist by provoking a direct reaction from an audience. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I'm addicted to creating both horror and comedy content is because you see if it's working in the audience, whether it's through a scream or through a laugh. You're creating that actual physical reaction.
Well, speaking of instant, we got to leave it there. James Gunn wrote and directed Slither, one of my favorite movies. He also wrote Dawn of the Dead, which really messed me up. And Lucky McKee directed The Woods and wrote and directed May. Their new project is the comedy short film pilot series for Xbox Live's independent video channel, which premiered on November 26th. James, Lucky, thanks for being on The Business.
Hey, thank you, Claude.
Thank
really
you,
appreciate
sir.
It.
You can find more information about horror meets comedy at our website, kcrw.org/thebusiness. A final note. Until this year, Thanksgiving for me was always an opportunity for a little bit of gratitude and a lot of gluttony. But forevermore, it will mark the passing of an old friend. Last Tuesday, Jerry Schoenfeld passed away at the age of 84. Jerry was chairman of the Schubert Organization, America's oldest professional theater company and the largest theater owner on the Great White Way. He'd been on the job since 1972. That's the year I was born. And as Frank Rich noted the other day, he ruled Broadway, quote, absolutely and sometimes even wisely. In 1998, I was just a knock-kneed kid reporter covering Broadway for Variety in New York, and Jerry was magnanimous enough to introduce me to people I really had no business talking to. Playwrights like Athel Fugard and Edward Albee, producers like Manny Eisenberg. He always took my nosy calls, answering his phone with, "What's the news from the Rialto, kid?" I still remember being late for the curtain of a preview of Sideman, which would go on to win the Tony Award for Best Play that year. And as I ran down 8th Avenue towards 45th Street, I saw out of the corner of my eye that a man Jerry had recently introduced me to was also frantically jogging alongside. It was none other than Warren Light, the author of the play I was about to go see. Like two milers breaking the tape at the end of a big race, we burst into the John Golden Theater and scurried with heavy breath into the back row. Lights went down, and as the show went on, we sat there watching, each of us occasionally scribbling something on our notepads by the light of our cell phones. Me, notes for a story, and Warren, notes for his cast. It was a perfect moment, one that stays with you your whole life. And Jerry Schoenfeld helped make that possible for me. But my little life on the Broadway beat was only a candle compared to the Klieg light of the man who produced shows like A Chorus Line, Glengarry Glen Ross, Nicholas Nickleby, Amadeus, Dreamgirls, Little Shop of Horrors, and even the current Broadway revival of Equus. So, Jerry no doubt felt what I felt that night in the theater many, many times over. And if that's true, he died a very, very happy man. And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.